C1SP. Number 16B.
And now we come to the fish subject, that very short subject which shows the false sense of creation and fatherhood, depicting in its going further in its uncovering. Science must solve the mystery of spiritualism, must solve the mysteries of unusual phenomena. And in this further uncovering, it shows that apparitions are always evolved from mortal mentality, that unusual phenomena are not evolved from spirits, are not manifestations of spirits, but that they have always their origin, their father, so to say, in mortal mentality. Mortals evolve their own images of thought. That's the key note and the key explanation of everything. And therefore explains that all these extraordinary images and sounds and haunted houses and ghostly voices, unusual noises and apparitions in spiritualistic seances are all that they are all evolved, what she says, involuntary by mortal mind. She shows that not only the conscious, voluntary human mind can evolve, or the individual conscious human mind can evolve apparitions, but that the general thought, that involuntary human mind, is also a factor which has to be taken into consideration. You see, it's that factor where we have so often, with which we have so often to deal in the practice. People get sick or have some disharmonious condition, and the first thing they will tell is, I have never thought of this disease. I have never thought of such an accident or so. Why did it happen? If all is mental, they say, if all is mental, and if I have never thought of them, why did they happen? They should never have happened. Well, it is only because they don't see this fifth subject and see that mortal mind is not only individual, but that it is also collective and universal, and that not only the individual mortal mind has its tricks on us, but also that collective mortal mind, the universal mortal mind, has its tricks on us. And therefore we are never safe just because we have never thought of a specific evil to happen. Usually, unconsciously and involuntarily, we have thought and believed in these universal beliefs of mortal mind. We usually all have a life insurance and an accident insurance, and I don't know what. Why do we have it? Because involuntarily and unconsciously we believe that an accident can happen. And then when it happens, we say, well, I have never thought of this accident. See, but we bow down to the general belief in accident. We bow down to the general belief that all men must die. We bow down to the general belief that so and so many millions of people are sick. And we bow down that so and so many hospitals are full. We bow down to all these things consciously or unconsciously and nourish them. Who among us could say that he doesn't believe in it? That he has a mind so free that he can see what he really asks us to see, that in our universe there has never been a fallen man, there has never been a sick man, there has never been an organic mortal. We just bow down all consciously or unconsciously, through individual consciousness or individual subconsciousness. Through collective subconsciousness and through collective consciousness, through universal subconsciousness and universal consciousness, through traditional beliefs and I don't know what. These are all claims that spring into action whenever they can. That spring into action whenever, and they hit at random whoever they can. In the law of mortal mind, there is no justice. It can hit the so-called best man, can hit the so-called the best so-called religious men, the best so-called humanitarian. Mortal mind has no reservation about that, you see. It's cruel. You see, that's why this chapter is so important, that it says, well, we have to see that our consciousness is always more and more asking, what does mind say about the situation? What does spirit know about the situation? What does soul know about our whole identity? What does principle behold as its universe? What is life producing and producing every moment? Is life producing ghastly voices? Is life producing accidents, sickness, and so on? Well, if we are conscious of the true fatherhood of God and men, then these unusual apparitions will not happen to us. But until we are consciously conscious of the truth of it, then involuntary mortal mind will play its bag of tricks on us. That's what she says here. But and the explanation she gives, you see, is very easy. She says, well, after all, seeing that we believe what we see, but also that we see and hear and feel and taste what we believe. That the physical senses are not original, they are not primary. Behind the physical, five physical senses always stands the belief. And therefore, it is just one is as good as the other to believe what we see or to see what we believe. Just both are wrong. Both are based on belief. You see, so often I think one hears of people who say, well, Jesus appeared to me. So often I hear, especially perhaps from elderly ladies at the end of their years or so, that they say, oh, I'm so happy, I think I don't fear any more death and so on. Last night Jesus came to me and I saw him and he nodded at me or he talked to me or whatever it was, you see. And they have a holy feeling that Jesus is taking care of them. But naturally, that's only belief. They see what they believe. And if somebody in his older age or in distress or in religious fervency is constantly contemplating some phases of Jesus' life or of Jesus as a person or anything, then it's quite natural that one moment the thing is reversed, that one sees what one believes and not only believes what one sees. But it's not the divine. These people then feel that really God and Jesus has come to them and is looking after them. That's spiritualism. There's only one thing that is looking after us, and that's the nature of God itself. And no eye can see a divine idea. No eye can see the Christ idea. It's only spiritual sense that can do that. And so it goes on and on. We have to be well aware, you see, that the true sense of this fifth subject would tell us that only that is true and is a true concept which is born of life, which is born of the true life. Then we express true fatherhood. Well, then we come to the sixth subject, which leads this thought just further on. It shows in the sixth subject that mortal concepts can always be called back to consciousness. That any mortal concept can always be called back to consciousness. That for those not initiated in mind reading would call this extraordinary, would call this phenomenal, and because spiritualism and hypnotism and clairvoyance is using this ad libitum and intentionally. One has the ignorant thought has a feeling that something supernatural, something divine is at work. But if science comes again and uncovers what lies behind it and must bring light into that mystery, we begin to see that what happened is this. First, in life, she has shown that apparitions are evolved involuntarily by mortal mind. That this unusual phenomena can be evolved involuntarily by mortal mind. Therefore, they are not conscious, but they are in the subconscious. That these involuntary actions remain in the realm of the subconscious. And so truth comes and says, well, then through the consciousness of truth, we can bring to the surface that which lies hidden and secret in the subconscious. So the whole tone of truth here is all about the question, can we make or can we bring up to consciousness that which lies hidden in subconsciousness? And the answer to it is yes. But by saying yes, she doesn't say that this is always a divine happening, but that it is just can be just as much in the range of mortal mind reading as we can also detect it from the standpoint of immortal mind reading. She says, she builds it up very nicely. And it's, before I go through it, just you know what this subject is. It's all about showing that which has been forgotten or lost to the consciousness, that which is laid hidden in the subconscious, that all can be taken back to consciousness, that all can be recollected and made conscious and brought up into our consciousness. And here again she says, this is not something mysterious. First, she has seven subtones, and in the first subtone she just shows that these mental concepts can always be called back to consciousness. She doesn't say that's something mysterious. She says that portraits, landscape paintings, facsimiles of penmanship, peculiarities of expression, recollected sentences, and so on, that they can all be taken from pictorial thought and memory. And spiritualists in spiritualistic seances make use of that very, very largely. See, that they, through spiritualistic seances, they reproduce, say, the signature of a departed husband or a departed mother or so, or that through spiritualistic mediums they get in their handwritings a nice letter and so on, and a message. All that can be done. Or that they paint a picture of a scenery which they never have seen, but which somewhere has existed in pictorial mind. And so these are all possible, but we must see that is not something unusual or supernatural, but that it is just reproducing what exists in human belief. You know, it only shows one thing which I'm very impressed to know, namely that mortal belief is much stronger than we usually think it is. That the mortal belief, a pictorial thought, the pictorial thought of a disease, of a cancer, of the picture of some grandmother who lived in the house and died away by arthritis and so on, that those pictures just slowly in the subconscious gone and on, and after 20, 30, 40 years just spring into action like that, from one moment to the other. And then these people say, why did it happen? And when one goes further and further, suddenly they yield and say, after all, I always nurtured that through all those years. I nurtured that picture of that disease. I nurtured that fear that I could have a stroke. I nurtured that picture of this and that through 20, 30, 40, 60 years. And it has never been wiped out. It has never been replaced by the true image and likeness of God. And then these things which have been hidden for years and decades, then just one moment must come where it can hit, and it hits. And it hits badly. So let's see that we can't play with this chapter. We can't just laugh at spiritualism as a spiritualistic as a system of spiritualists in spiritualistic seances. It is a system of beliefs, and these beliefs seem to be much stronger than our ignorance allows it to be. But they are powerless, completely powerless, the moment we turn to the immortal mind reading. The moment our whole stature and manhood is constantly lined up with what does mind say to me? Mind, the divine mind, always says that which is contained in the divine mind. That's the content. Divine spirit always unfolds in me what the divine spirit contains. The unfoldment of spiritual reality and spiritual strength and spiritual vision. The divine soul always expresses what to me, what it contains in itself. It always names me as the blessed child of God. Free, sinless, free from sickness, free from accident, free from anything, and it names me as the Son of God. And so I must see that the real content of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and law, if I don't see that, then my consciousness is wide open to the content of the conscious error and of the subconscious error. And it's wide open to the conscious error, individual conscious error, and even wider open to the universal, traditional, cosmic, even cosmic error, to astrology and the claims of astrology and so on. So here she brings out this and says, she explains and says, well, that's quite natural that which ever happened in human thought, what human thought has ever seen or heard or done or felt or smelled, that which happened in human thought, that is happening in the realm of human thought, and that is independent of the presence or not presence of the person, reproducible. Can you say reproducible? Can be reproduced. And then she goes on and says, after all, you know, comes to the subtonal sphere and says, after all, you know that before a painter paints a painting on a canvas, he first has to conceive of it mentally. He has first to have a mental concept, and that mental concept is as substantial, as material substantial as the canvas picture itself. And so she shows that every material concept has first existed in a material mental conception. Then she goes on and says, and therefore that's why the reason why a mind reader can reproduce them, copy them, but they can reproduce these writings and these paintings and sentences and so on. They can reproduce because it's in mentality and not in materiality. And that is independent, as principle is said, that is independent of person, because it's the belief. We are reading the belief, we are not reading the person. We are reading the belief. With mind reading, we read the belief and not the person. The person is right after the question. Therefore, it's not important if that person is present or absent, if it's near or not near. It's the belief that that mortal mind is reading. And that belief always floats in the general atmosphere of the human mind, mortal mind. And there it can be discerned and can be described and it can be transmitted and it can be copied and reproduced and so on. And that's what's really happening, you see, that's what's really happening. All our diseases which hang on us are mostly happening that way, that they float in the general atmosphere of the human mind and just wait until they can strike at us. Until we open somewhere a little door to let error come in, and then they strike at us. And so he goes on and shows that only through science we can really handle this thing. That we can only through science we are unable to detect them and to heal them. That we can't do it through clairvoyance or mesmerism. Then she goes on and says, therefore, all these buried secrets, all these forgotten concepts, they all are here, and they can be unearthed, and they can be brought up to the conscious, from the subconscious to the conscious. And she gives us as a last indication, she shows that we can do that at our heart's content. That we can do that at our heart's content. That at our heart's content, through memory, through mortal mind, through our daydreams and so on, we can at our heart's content reproduce and call back to present condition the touch of a hand, the sound of the voice, the sentences, the flavor, the taste, and so on. We can do that. We can bring back to consciousness so easily a nice scenery we have seen 20 years ago, the shake of a hand of a friend that has left us 10 years ago, the odor of a situation where we just had to close our nose, pinch our nose, and so on, showing that the material universe is not the primal fact. That's what the five physical senses detect are not the primal fact. That primal is always the mental state, the mental belief, the mental state. And because the mental has no time and has no place, it can always be reproduced by consciousness. Well, that's a pretty bad picture, a pretty sad picture in one way. In another way, a very hopeful picture, because as she has shown before, that mind reading should have a purpose to heal and to save. So through this mind reading, by bringing the subconscious and the forgotten and the hidden to present consciousness, can be a very big help. Can be a very big help and has lost something which are really vital to our being and so on, to recall and recollect something which we need, which is a help for the present situation. But in the general, this mind reading is a very sad picture, because at our heart's content we can recall mortal mind beliefs and build up and build up and build up more the universe of mortal mind more and more, instead of overcoming it and overcoming it. So, as a matter of fact, what she really shows is there any purpose in this mind reading? Would show that if it is done freely, ad libitum, I shouldn't say freely, unrestrictedly without a divine purpose, you see, if it's done that way, it's really negative. What's the use of recalling all sorts of things? We just should forget sometimes the sentence that somebody has told us. We should get over a human opinion which has been voiced to us instead of calling it back as if I would hear it still now, what he has said and what she has said and what reason that. See, instead of resuscitating, so to say, the material world, the mortal mental world, we should overcome it, we should lay it down and build up the new universe of ideas. And that's why in the last subject of love, she really begins to tackle that and says, now, what is the value? What is the real value of this uncovering? What is the real value of this mentality? Is any sort of mentality a good thing, a wonder of God? Or should we be very clear to make the distinction between the universe of mortal mind and the universe of divine mind? Shall we go on to recall at our heart's content the touch of a hand, the sound of a sentence, and so on? Shall we recall our past history? Shall we constantly recall all what has happened in our life, the disasters, the bad times, the dark times, and so on, the worries, and so on? Or shall we leave that behind and see that the real mentality is that mentality which is of God? And that's the last subject.